Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up in about 10 minutes. Get ready to join in for a round of opinion roulette. We will invite you to call in with your opinion about any issue in the news, as long as you react to the opinion of the previous caller. So get ready for opinion roulette coming up. Right now, as New York's public school students and staff and people from lots of other schools all around enjoy spring recess this week, Chancellor Dennis Walcott passes the one-year mark in his position as head of the New York City public school system. And joining us now is Beth Fertig, our education reporter here at WNYC and for our education website, in collaboration with the New York Times, schoolbook.org, for a roundup of some of the latest and ever contentious education news. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Brian.
Let's begin by talking briefly about Dennis Walcott's first year as chancellor. A recent poll by Quinnipiac found 43% of voters approving and 31% disapproving of his job performance. I guess that's an improvement over what came before after the unpopular Joel Klein and the Kathy Black debacle, or is it?
Well, when Kathy Black was dismissed, her approval rating was about 25%, I think, maybe 27%. So it's definitely improvement since then. But it definitely also shows that there's a way to go in terms of getting the public to really believe that Dennis Walcott is on their side. You know, the mayor appointed someone who had been his deputy mayor and knew education, had been in the trenches for a long time. And having Dennis Walcott take the job was really like putting a bandage on a wound. You know, you have somebody who really knows the school system, going and visiting schools, letting people know, I'm here, I'm ready to listen. But there's still an administration that is often at conflict with some communities when they want to propose closing schools, or when they do the teacher evaluations and the teachers union gets very mad. So there's a lot of contentious issues that are still out there.
In an interview with schoolbook.org, our education website, he said that the tone of the citywide education debate has improved under his leadership. And was that one of his main goals for this first year, that even if he agreed with all the policies of Joel Klein, which I think largely he did, that Klein was just seen as so user unfriendly that he was trying to change that?
He didn't say that outright, but he did say several times that we can disagree without being disagreeable. I'm always here. I'm always going to listen to you, but I want you to treat me with respect and I'll treat you with respect. And that was something he said again and again and again over those first few months. And he continues to say when he goes to have public hearings, he does a lot of town halls. Not sure how much heads up he always gives, sometimes just a few days or a few weeks, but he does a lot of town halls around the city. He does take questions from the public. There are a lot of visits that he makes to schools. If you go by the very contentious public hearings over school closings, it'll look like the tone hasn't changed at all. It's only gotten worse. But he says, don't judge me on those. There's all the other visits that I make.
And he's certainly continuing the Klein-Bloomberg policy of aggressively closing schools that are perceived to be failing. But he recently decided not to close seven schools out of the 33 that were so contentiously marked for closure. What changed?
It's very hard to believe anything changed, given that these schools had always been controversial for being on this list. They had report card grades from the city of A in the case of Maxwell High School and B's for the others. And these were schools that were picked by the city initially not to close, but to improve with federal school improvement grants that are worth up to $2 million a year, these 33 schools. And what changed was that the city needed an agreement with the union for teacher evaluations by the end of 2011. And when that didn't happen, they no longer qualified for the federal funds. And the city went to the state and said, you know what? We're going to do this without the union. We have a way of closing them and reopening them in order to qualify for the federal funds.
And releasing up to half the teachers in each school.
Right. That's the condition. You'd have to release half the teachers or up to half the teachers at each school and in many cases replace their principals in order to qualify for those funds. But you don't need the teacher evaluation system. So that was the city going around this block it had with the union. The union accused the city of playing politics and said, you could still reach a deal with us. The two sides are, you know, still at odds about that. The union's requesting state mediation. So it's a very, very explosive issue because the union is saying the Bloomberg administration is just going after us to punish us, to fire these teachers. But the city is saying, no, we want this federal money, and we believe that these schools could improve. But from the outside, it does raise questions when you see schools that the city had never intended to close and had said, we want to use federal money to improve them, now suddenly saying, you know what, they should be closed. Mm. And so you've got these communities up in arms because the city, the schools will close technically and reopen with new names in September. The city is not releasing many detailed plans about what it wants to do with them, only that the students can return, but not all the teachers and not the principals in many cases. So you've got school staff and kids really worried about what's going to happen to these schools this fall.
And one new wrinkle on teacher evaluations, which of course, are contentious, and there were those teacher data reports, the ratings of the teachers that were released recently that Chancellor Walcott, among many others, had been apprehensive about because it doesn't give parents or other people all the information we need to evaluate teachers. The New York Post has a story today, I don't know if you've seen it yet, about teacher grades maybe getting released to parents but not to the general public.
I think what happened was after the city released this data to the media following Freedom of Information requests, the data being teacher evaluations that are based solely on how their students performed on state exams, which came under a lot of controversy because those ratings, there have been a lot of people who agree that they are not alone a determinant of a teacher's value, because they're only based on student test scores. They just look at one thing. There are also flaws sometimes to the formula. They have wide margins of error. But the city says they're useful for seeing which teachers are consistently performing at the top and bottom. And they were used for evaluating, making tenure decisions. So that system's done now. Mm-hmm. The city's moving toward a new teacher evaluation system, if it agrees with the union by next January, in which test scores will be up to 40% of a teacher's rating. The rest will be classroom evaluations. But what this caused was a lot of concern around the state that, oh my God, if they could release the data in New York City, they could release it in Buffalo or Albany. And I think you see lawmakers feeling the heat from teachers' unions saying, whoa, if you put this out there, it's going to cause a lot of parents to freak out and the community. So maybe just release it to the parents of the affected students and not to the general public.
Although that's an interesting line, because didn't they ever hear of Facebook?
Yeah, you know, you think if you put it out there, the genie's out of the bottle, it'll get out somehow. But I think a lot of people are worrying, you know, how do we do this in a fair way that doesn't just taint teachers and create headlines that say 10 worse teachers, you know, because that's not the full story.
School surveys. Like many New York City parents, I filled out my school survey at the last minute last week, just before the due moment. The forms they let each member of the school community, there are different ones, I guess, for parents and for students. My son filled one out, too. I guess the kids were given them or access to them online. And parents and staff members, teachers, principals, others could also fill them out, I gather. We'll see about the results citywide eventually, I guess. But I was struck by a few things about the questions. A lot seemed to be based around how well the school communicates with parents. Mm-hmm. And it also did ask explicitly if we think there is too much or too little standardized test prep. And I'll be curious to see the results from that question if they release it and if it's different by neighborhood or socioeconomic group.
I know that those school surveys are taken into account for the school report cards, when they give those A through F school report cards, school environment counts for 15% of the rating. Mm. And those parent evaluations are part of that, and the teacher and the student evaluations. And they look at how many parents fill them out. They don't want to see a school where only, you know, 25 parents filled it out. That's a bad sign to the Department of Ed. So principals do a lot to get parents to fill those out and really, you know, say, hey, help us out. You know, the school's going to be judged on whether or not you fill this out, regardless of what you say. But they, you know, it's difficult to judge how valuable those are, because in some cases teachers fill them out. If they're angry at a principal, they'll give low evaluations right. to the environment of a school just to get rid of a principal if they're angry. Parents may be swayed one way or another. I don't know what kind of lobbying is going on at your school, Brian, if people are pressuring you to write one thing or another.
No, nothing that
no,
I've
nothing
heard.
Like
only,
that?
Only pressuring to fill one in.
Okay. And when the results come out, they are available on the school's report card. You do get to see what percentage of uh-huh. parents said, you know, highly effective or, you know, I agree or I don't agree with any of those statements that you talked about.
All right. Briefly, and our guest, WNYC education reporter, Beth Fertig, let's talk about your most recent story on schoolbook.org, our education site, about long waiting lists for kindergarten seats. More than 2,400 children are on these lists to get into their zoned New York City public school kindergartens for next fall. Why has the education department not been able to keep up with the rising demand for neighborhood kindergarten
seats? Hey, that's the big question, you know, and a lot of parents, especially in growing neighborhoods like Lower Manhattan, say the Department of Ed hasn't done enough planning. They haven't opened enough seats. They're not keeping up with things, with the demographics of the city. The Department of Ed will tell you, hey, we are, you know, we've got plans down the road to open more seats. But in this city, even though school enrollment is growing, but not dramatically. What you do see is more kindergartners being enrolled in certain neighborhoods. And the parents tend to stay for the first few years, unlike in the past when they would immediately leave or they couldn't afford it. But they do tend to leave by middle school because they are dissatisfied with the choices in the middle schools. And so that's part of why Chancellor Walcott, for his first major policy that he wanted in his, you know, first year in office, was to improve middle schools. And he revisited that last year, saying he's well on track to opening more than his goal of 50 new middle schools. So we have these problems in Corona, Queens, in Brownstone, Brooklyn, in Lower Manhattan, Upper West Side. There are waiting lists of more than 100 kids at some of these kindergartens. And you could see it on our map at WNYC.org. You could see which schools have the biggest waiting lists. And the Department of Ed says, look, this happens. We will find seats for almost all of these kids in their zone schools by the fall as kids pick private schools or gifted and talented programs or get into charter schools. You know, it definitely does shake out. But there were still kids last year, hundreds of kids who did not get into their zone schools and have to go to other schools in the district. And so it'll be interesting to see how many that is this year. But a couple of years ago, there were just 1,000 kids on waiting lists for their zoned elementary schools. Last year, it exploded. It was over 2,400. Oh. This year, it's a little less mm-hmm. than it was last year, a couple of hundred less, even though more kids applied. But it's still definitely an issue.
All right. We have 30 seconds left. Tell us about your search for photographs of principals' offices.
Oh, well, I've been covering the schools for a long time, and one thing I love seeing is what principals do with their offices, because there's still a lot of really old, beautiful elementary school buildings and even some high school buildings where principals have these gigantic offices with long tables, and they always have their own bathroom, and you'll see they'll put like potpourri and soaps and hand creams and even fuzzy toilet seats, you know, because they're there all the time. They're always in their buildings. They want to have a little comfortable home away from home. And then there's schools where the school has been divided up into four schools within one building, and the principal may have a small office. But they tend to keep so many interesting things in their offices. It could be trophies. It could be inspirational quotes. So what I did was I asked principals to send me a photo of them in their office with something of importance, and we'll be running those photos this week. We encourage principals, if you're off this week and you're listening right now, send me a photo, bfertig@wnyc.org, of you in your office. You could do it next week when you get back to school, or this week if you happen to have a moment and you wander into your building. You know, we'd love to see this. It tells us something about the people in the schools and, you know, a little look behind the bureaucracy, you know? It's fun to get into the principal's office.
All right, principals, email your office photos to bfertig@wnyc.org. We'll continue to talk about education later in this holiday week when we know a lot of people interested in the topic can listen when you ordinarily can't. And you can see our education reporter Beth Fertig's work at wnyc.org and at schoolbook.org. Thanks, Beth.
You're welcome.